Goodness, I hope you guys had a nice lunch. And I'm going to start off. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Polly.
And we're going to start, thank you. We're going to start with tradition one. And Dave and I have just kind of reworded these traditions a little bit differently. And so here we go. Our common welfare should come first. A healthy relationship depends upon unity. And like in the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Big Book dedicates 43 pages plus the doctor's opinion to the first step. That tells me that's probably pretty important. Well, same with the first tradition. There's no point in going on any further if there's no unity. And that's what we're striving for. That's what we strive for in our group. That's what we strive for in AA. That's what we strive for in our relationships. Unity means that the two of us make one whole. I have to ask myself, do I think my partner and myself as a unit? Dave and I are a partnership. We are a marriage. I can have a sponsorship relationship. I can have a friendship relationship. I'm looking at Sally, but a friendship. And we both need to want to be in this relationship. And what happens is when we both want to be in the relationship, then we're going to work towards the common welfare of that relationship. That what's good for both of us, not just good for me, but what's good for both of us. So that probably means that Dave and I are going to have to communicate. And sometimes that's really difficult, especially finally I have learned. It has taken me a really long time, but finally I have learned that men and women are different. It really took me a long time to learn that. And what I wanted from Dave, I thought. What I was trying to get from Dave was everything. I wanted him to provide all my needs. And one of the needs that I have is I have a need to talk about stuff. And I think most women do. I want to talk about it and carry on, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Dave doesn't want to talk about it. He wants you, if I start talking about something, he wants to head right for the solution, and all I want him to do is just listen. Well, he isn't wired that way. So I'm finally learning that. So what happens is that what I want for the relationship is our common welfare. So one of the things that I have to do as far as the unity goes is not have expectations on him that he can't deliver. And I don't know if any other women have sang this song, but one of the songs that I used to sing is that you're not emotionally available to me. And you know what? That's true. He's not. He isn't capable of being emotionally available to me. And as he says, Polly, I just don't have that many feelings. Thank you, Jesus. He says, I know that you need to talk about things like that, but I don't. And one of the things that I love that Dave has down here is we have worked with other couples that have come to us throughout the years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that has been, it's just like sponsoring. It has been a huge, you know, learning for us. The more we work with another couple, the more we learn about each other. And one of the things that Dave said one time is that I'm always looking for my 50%. You know, I want to make sure, you know, that you're doing what you're supposed to do and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And Dave said one time, and this has changed my whole perspective. He says, Polly, I'm not worried about getting my 50%. I just want to make sure you get yours. And so what happens is when I stop worrying about what Dave isn't doing and make sure to see what I am doing, it is amazing how my life turned around. Because what happened is that I stopped looking at him and criticizing him. And Dave says this about sponsorship. He says, I don't want to be a critic. I want to be a coach. And when I stopped criticizing about all the things that he didn't do, Dave doesn't brag about the things he does. So a lot of things that he does, I find out later, because he doesn't bring them to my attention. So what happens is I would be criticizing something that he had already done or what happened because he didn't tell me he did it, and I would criticize it. So what I have learned to do is not worry about whether or not I'm getting my 50% and making sure he's doing his part. Let me just make sure I'm doing my part. And when I stop trying to criticize him and think about the common welfare of the relationship, and I can tell you, when people are always nitpicking at each other in a relationship, it's in trouble. It is absolutely in trouble, because a person can only stand to be nitpicked just so long. And pretty soon it's like, I'm not sure I want to be nitpicking about something like that. So unity cannot automatically preserve itself. Like personal recovery, we shall always have to work to maintain it. I have to work at this. Relationships are not easy. And sometimes I bite my tongue till I nearly bite it through. It is not easy. And what I need to do before I criticize is talk to somebody. Because what happens is if I criticize, I usually come off in anger. And, excuse me, Dave is very easy to forgive me. But you see, once it's said, once we do it, we're going to be forgiven more than likely. But the person will never forget it. So once the hurt and once it's said, it's said. So what I want to do is be very careful not to say something that I'm going to be sorry for and he's going to remember. But he'll always forgive me, but he'll remember it. And one of the things that I'm really bad about is that I'm always get enthusiastic in conversations and all, and Dave is kind of a quieter soul, and he'll be having a conversation with somebody, and I'll just jump in there and kind of take it over. And I did that this past week. I did that. And as soon as he starts to shut down, I know I've done it. Because I've just like cut him off at the pass. And I just want to go, oh my God, I did it again. And so it's a character defect that just keeps arising its ugly little head. So in a relationship, we need to be honest. We need to have honesty, humility, open-mindedness, unselfishness, and above all, vigilance. I mean, because this stuff is going to keep coming up and coming up and coming up. So we must ponder carefully the experience others have already had of trying to work and live together. Relationships can go on benders too. So if you know somebody who has a good relationship, you like what they have, do like AA. Find out what they did. And that's what Dave and I did. We started with my AA sponsor, who married late in life. And, I mean, after his mother died, he left the priesthood and married. And I loved his relationship. And then my Al-Anon sponsor and her husband, before Albert died, they were almost going to be married 50 years. And Sally and I would go to things called Woman to Woman, which was AA and Al-Anon, and we'd go there. And she'd open up her suitcase. And, I mean, they'd been married 40-something years. And she'd have all these love notes in her suitcase that Albert had stuck in stuff. And I wanted romance. I wanted that in my marriage. And, you know, it's like, how do you get that? And Sally and Albert, you know, sat us down one day and says, there's magic words. I love you. Please forgive me. I was wrong. And you know what Frank Honeycutt said, who was Dave's sponsor in California? Frank says, just, you know, we can admit we're wrong when we maybe aren't even wrong. Somebody needs to admit they're wrong. Let's get moving so we can start to have a conversation about it. And Frank used to say, what do you want? You want to be happy or you want to be right? Let's just get moving and get to a place where we can have some unity and begin to talk about it. Think about a business meeting. Sometimes you just have to let people go on and on and on and on, and then just kind of come back and let them finish all their stuff. Very similar. An AA business meeting is like trying to have a relationship. What an order. I can't go through with it. Okay, Dave and I have a checklist for the traditions. And tradition one, how important are my relationships to me? What am I willing to sacrifice for my marriage, my relationships? I am willing to go to any lengths for the relationships in my life, just like I am for my sobriety. I'm willing to do that. And a lot of times that's having to take a really good look at myself. Because most of the time, it's just like the 12 and 12 said, is if anything's going wrong in my life, it's probably because of me. And the big book says most of my problems are of my own making. So it is a spiritual axiom. Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. And if I'm willing to look at me before I'm willing to look at him, I'm probably going to be in pretty good shape. What effect do my actions have on my relationship and our family? My actions have a lot. I mean, I can harm Dave. I can harm my sons. I can harm my grandchildren by my actions. I have to be ever accountable. That's what we are in this program, ever accountable for my actions, past and present. Am I a giver or a taker? I strive to be a giver, but I'm still a taker. Do I use silence as a refuge or punishment while expecting my mate to read my mind? Oh, my God, was I a puffer-upper? You know, puff up, and it was your business to find out what was wrong with me, and if you didn't find out, then you didn't love me? Oh, boy. Do I try to listen when my mate has something to say? Do I get defensive or angry? And Dave and I have learned through the years. We're pretty good. We can almost have a meeting together today without the other one interrupting. And we get to have our say, and we get to, we get to talk, and nobody gets to interrupt. And that's been huge. And then the answer is, are you finished now before we start again? So what happens is to be able to have those lines of communication. And believe me, that's a foreign trait for an alcoholic, to be able to sit and have that kind of communication, in my opinion. Do I admire and approve of my mate? Does he know that? Do I admire and approve of anyone who does not know that I do? Do I admire and approve of anyone who does not know that I do? Why haven't I told them? Do I know that it would be of great personal benefit for me to do so? I want to let you know. I want to let him know. I want to let you know that I approve of you. I love you. That looks, that's a great job you're doing. If I can just keep that affirmation going. And that if when I keep that affirmation going and affirming your good actions, and then instead of focusing on your negative actions, it's amazing how much more positive energy goes out into the universe. Am I a peacemaker? And Dave and I used to be a peace at any cost. And today we take more risk about willing to tell each other the truth. Can I be flexible? And that's one of the things that I seem to be able to roll with the punches pretty easily, and sometimes I expect him to roll the same way I roll, and he's just not ready to roll. loosen up. I mean, it's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says wear life like a loose garment. And sometimes I'm so rigid. Well, you said this, and now I don't want to, you said we were going to do this at this time. And both of us can be really rigid. And so what happens is let's lighten up. just lighten up. And I think we're pretty good at it now that we're in our 70s. I mean, like, who wants to spend all that much time complaining about all that silly stuff? Life is really getting short. You know, we're seeing that. You guys are still bulletproof, and a lot of you young, you know. But when you start getting towards the end, who wants to spend all that time nitpicking? It just isn't worth it. Loosen up. Lighten up. God, Dave and I moved from Birch Bay, Washington to Jacksonville, Florida. Here came these two old people and their two little puppies across the country. Amazing. So you're never too old to do anything. What must others do to accommodate my insecurities? I had a lot of insecurities, and I would pout and feel sorry for myself, and just I just got my feelings hurt way too easily. And sometimes today I've gone a little too far the other way, because Dave is more sensitive than I am, and I will end up just by being, you know, sharp and fast and quick, I'll hurt his feelings. And it'll come out of my mouth, and I'll just kind of seem. And he'll just act like I've just shot him. And I just have to realize one more time, I just was too sharp. To the person I love the most, I just am too sharp. So I have to be sensitive to my partner. Our common welfare. I'm not going to be happy in this marriage and in this relationship if Dave's not. If he's afraid to have a conversation with me because I'm going to bite his head off. Do I try to be understanding and forgiving when my mate rubs me the wrong way? Both of us are pretty good about it. We're doing it faster as the years go by. We used to take a little while. Seem to do faster now. Do I spout platitudes about love while indulging in and secretly justifying behavior that bristles with hostility? I used to be very sarcastic and would give these backwards things. I would criticize him in a kind of a backwards way. And thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous and thanks to Al-Anon, today I try to be more direct. That thing is, say what you mean what you say, just don't say it mean. And both of us really, we say that a lot because we really, truly try to practice that. Do I share all of me, good and bad? Do I have some secrets from Dave? I do not tell Dave everything. I mean, there are days when I could tear his face off, and I do not think well of him. And I have, you know, lots of opinions about him. And I am really grateful that I didn't choose to share that. I might share it with one of you, but what I do today is I try carefully not to share it with him. Because if I do, it's going to hurt him. I am going to cause him harm. And I today don't want to harm my partner. Tradition 2,
for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Each of us is God's trusted servant, neither governs. So this just means that, that God's the boss, and we just have to somehow put our opinions and egos aside and allow him to do what he does best, which is guide his children. And we've proven that our inability to govern is complete. We only have to look back at our own lives to see that our perceptions are askew. Our judgment is faulty. We mistakenly think we know what is right with metaphysical certitude. And ultimately, we have to face the fact that our way of conducting our lives produced a crisis of overwhelmingly tragic proportions. So when I speak for Polly without consulting her, I'm just taking on responsibilities for which I have no claim. There are times when one person in a relationship by silent agreement will take a lead role. The other person will be subservient. And that, I don't think that's very healthy. You know, I mean, it's nice if you screw up a lot and you want to blame the other person. You know, if you let them be in charge and something bad happens, it's their fault, right? I'm not in charge. But so, you know, we just feel like neither partner can assume responsibility for speaking for the other without first having at least consulted them. I mean, at the very least, this is a matter of simple courtesy. And there are times when each of us thinks the other's wrong. You know, there are times when we think the other is just dead wrong. Not suspect, you know, not think. No, they're wrong. And we believe that right up to within 500 microseconds of finding out, no, it's me that's wrong. I hate when that happens. I so love to be right, but you know, but being right is one of the seven deadly needs. You ever heard about those? The seven deadly needs? Yeah, well, that's the first one, the need to be right. Always needing to be right. If I'm right, obviously you're wrong. Don't you love that? God. You know, being right means I'm bulletproof. Can't say this. I'm emotionally indestructible. I have the sword of righteousness in my hand. So there's nothing wrong with being right. It's just the need to be right. And the second one is the need to look good. Man, we just have to loosen our death grip on the need to look hip, slick, and cool at all times, because we're just not gonna. I mean, and besides that, you know, looking foolish now and then is good for your spirit. And you know, often that is happens when we misplace our sense of humor, you know. And if that happens, give me a call. I'll come over, and I'm sure we can find it. You know, it'll be under the couch or, you know, somewhere. It'll be around somewhere. The third one is the need to control. God, do we love that one. The bad news is that your way doesn't work. Okay? Your way never has worked, and does not exist a body of evidence to suggest that your way is ever gonna work, and the same for me. So, you know, I'm in the same boat you are. You know, my life is not unmanageable at all. It's just unmanageable by me. So I'm as powerless over people, places, and things as you are. I mean, we're all in the same organization. And so we have done our very best to control our lives. We have pledged allegiance to the idea that it's better to be rich, handsome, and healthy than poor, ugly, and sick. And we have, but doing the... And so, you know, but... doing the very best we could to have a successful life, we wound up in AA. The hell is that? You know, I love this line. I love it when I write lines like this. We came here festooned in the tattered cloak of defeat. Don't you love it? We were failures. The fourth deadly need is the need to get even. Oh, yeah. So, you know, so you reap what you sow, or if you like, what goes around comes around. So, you know, there's the idea that if you let people do things like flip you off or something, you are a weak person. You are a wimp. The question then arises, what happens tomorrow if the same guy cuts me off and flips me the bird again? What if the other guy is a divine messenger? What if I'm the bad driver? I hate that. Number five is the need to know everything. Igor says we must know. It is important to know. We will be safe if we know. We'll be better off if we know. If I know why I'm an alcoholic, it will help me to resolve the problem. It doesn't, but it seems like it ought to. So the universe inclines toward us. Did you know that? It does. It wishes us well. This is of good intent. The universe is of good intent. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, the universe is unfolding as it should. Is there a God, a great spirit? Don't worry about it. The big thing that we need to know is how is my life today? Am I sober? Am I drug-free? Am I gambling away the grocery money? Am I yelling at Polly or my kids or at anybody? You know, if I'm loaded on booze or food or sex or groveling in self-pity or seething with resentment, you know, if I'm a seething bag of resentment, what difference does it make if there's a God or not? What the hell difference does it make? Besides, at some gut level, you know there is. You know, I asked God one night when I was at the apex of being an alcoholic derelict to help me, and the next day is my sobriety date. Is there a God? Yeah. Well, the sixth deadly need is the need to keep score. So, what do you do if you find out you're 12 points behind in the game of life? And the seventh one, I think, for me, is the worst, and that is the need to judge. Chuck C. used to say, you know, there's no law of God or man that says I can't judge you if I want to. I can judge the hell out of you if I want to, if I'm willing to pay the price. But whatever I judge, I am going to be judged. Heaped up, tamped down, and running over. And that's a lot of judgment. So, you know, that is a need that is deadly. It isolates us from our people. It's our method of parceling out blame. You know, whose fault is this? One of the great questions of an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Whose fault is this? You know, and we rarely assess the good in ourselves or anybody else. It's always something negative. So the need to judge just means essentially that I believe there is a right and a wrong, and that I can see and differentiate between them better than you. And it is my right, if not my duty, to assess you and the way you drive or talk or dress or think or believe or act or react. And I judge myself the same way in the worst possible light every time. So I like to think that I have learned to live out loud. That what you see is what you get. You know, don't take an exaggerated interest in what other people think of you. My buddy Frank said, what you think of me is none of my business. It's none of my business what you think of me. But my life depends on what I think of you. And I have come to believe that, you know. We have to try really hard not to make it difficult for people to be honest with us. Don't make it hard for somebody to tell you the truth. You know, don't act and react in such a way that they don't even want to talk to you, much less tell you the truth. So the checklist for tradition two is, do I insist on being the leader, and do I feel that it is my place to govern? Do I try to speak for others without consulting them? Boy, there's just almost nothing that irritates me more than somebody speaking for me without even bothering to ask me. You know, I think that is just almost the ultimate in disrespect. Do I criticize other people or do I trust them? I have learned to just don't criticize people. And I'll tell you why before this is all over with. But, you know, I have found out, I have really come to understand and believe with all my heart, down to my toes, that every last one of us is doing the very best that we can with our life. We are. I don't believe there's any one of us in here that has ever, in a way of speaking, has ever made a bad decision. I think if we knew better, we would do better. And a guy named Carlos Castaneda said, if you have made a decision in your life that didn't work out very well, if I take you back in time to the point where you made that decision and arm you only with the information and the facts that you had at the time you made it, you would make the same decision again. Nobody says, well, I think I'll make a really crappy decision today and screw up my life. No, people just, I mean, we don't do that. You know? So if somebody's trying to beat you over the head with one of your decisions, try to remember that, you know? Don't give them that power, because we don't do that. That's just not what we do. Do I criticize others or do I trust them? Well, I try to trust them. And, you know, and then you always have to turn that around. You always then have to turn around and ask yourself, am I trustworthy? You know, can people trust me? And so I have a sponsor named Tom I, who has a sponsor named Cecil C. Cease. And Cease has a little prayer. He has it written on a piece of, he has it printed on a piece of paper. He passes it out all the time wherever he goes. And the prayer is this: God, treat me tomorrow the way I treat others today. That'll make your sphincter oscillate. God, please treat me tomorrow the way I treat others today. Is my ego so strong that I must have credit for more than I do? Am I so insecure that I must always have some kind of praise for my actions and ideas? You know, guys, for the most part, many guys, maybe most guys, they like to be knights in shining armor, you know. Someone that their mate looks up to and admires. So I have to ask myself the question, can Polly look up to me and admire me? You know, we have there's a lady, she's a former Vegas hooker, and she came out with a very simple, easy to understand statement. If I want self-esteem, I have to do esteemable things. If I want to be respected, I have to be respectable. I have to understand and accept that I cannot command respect. I can deserve it, but I can't command it. Do I do my share in our relationship? And is that my opinion or is that Polly's? If you want to know if I do my share, don't ask me. Of course I do. Certainly I do. Why would you ask? And finally, does the thought of God being in charge of our relationship cause me any discomfort? No, I rely on it. Three.
Tradition three. The basic requirement for a good relationship is a mutual desire to make it work. Now, there are many reasons why people get into a relationship. Feelings of financial insecurity. People who are afraid that there's not enough money. And this can be men or women. It can go either way. The need for emotional security by having a mate. Some people would rather have a bad relationship than no relationship. And I see that a lot with the women I work with. It's like being alone is worse than being in a relationship that's abusive, hurtful, harmful, whatever. Feeling trapped due to responsibilities such as having children to raise alone. Many people will stay in a relationship because they don't want that responsibility to have to do that. So there's lots of reasons why people get into a relationship other than the mutual desire to make it work. And because what happens is they become relationships of faulty dependency, of what goes in that emotional sobriety that's in the language of the heart that Bill, the letter Bill wrote to the grapevine, is that we get in these faulty, these relationships that are faulty dependencies. And what happens is whenever I am depending on somebody else to give me happiness, I'm going to eventually resent that person. And that person is going to resent me for depending on them. I mean, it's going to be a lose-lose situation. So as when Dave and I decided that we were going to get married, and we went and talked to my AA sponsor, Frank. And Frank had said, and Dave and I talk a lot about Frank Honeycutt, and this Frank was sponsored by Frank Honeycutt. His name was Frank Fitzpatrick, and he lived in Texas. So it's amazing how small AA is. And then we eventually ended up with Frank. I met Frank Honeycutt in Texas, and a lot of people who know me heard me talk about him, and he was a beautiful, beautiful man in AA that lived in Long Beach, California. Anyway, we went to him, and he told us, he says, successful relationships are when you plant yourself like two oak trees. You plant yourself, and for us, because we're in AA, we plant ourselves in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we nurture ourselves with the steps and the traditions and the concepts. And by doing that and being responsible for ourselves, what happens is we grow strong like two oak trees, and then one day you look up and you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends. And that's what happens. But if I am leaning on Dave, or if he is leaning on me, then one of us is going to fall. And what Dave and I have tried to do is take responsibility for ourselves and be responsible and want to work equally as hard on this relationship. And some days we can give it all, and some days I can't give 10% and he has to give 90. So it, you know, but what it amounts to is we both want this relationship to work. So we put effort into it. The checklist for tradition 3. Do my actions say that I have a desire to be in this relationship? Do I show it by my actions? You know, the thing about it is we hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, your actions speak so loudly, I cannot hear a word you say. It's all about what I do, not what I say I do. Do I set myself up as a judge of my partner's intentions or sincerity? And I used to do that in past relationships, and earlier in this relationship, I'd say, you really don't feel that way. I would absolutely question what he says. Is, oh, I'm calling him a liar. Do I approach my marriage unselfishly, or do I depend on my mate's language, looks, education, age, appearance, jobs, whatever, to make me feel good? Do you need to be something that makes me look good? One of the things that I used to do all the time, and I'm sure Michael remembers this, is that I used to be responsible for Dave's social behavior. I mean, Dave is sometimes he's kind of a funny guy. I say he goes off into space and didn't know he went there. And a lot of times he'll just be sitting and he looks like he's ignoring you or whatever. So anyway, this lady came up to me one night at a meeting, and it was such growth for me. And she said, Polly, Dave acts like he's mad at me. Do you know what's wrong? I said, I don't. You might need to go talk to Dave about it. It's just not my night to watch him. And there would be nights that we'd be driving home, and I would be critiquing Dave on his social behavior. You ignored such and such. You paid more attention to such and such. I mean, I'm serious. This is that. I mean, we're talking sick behavior. You need to act and be something so I look okay.
I'm just in a blank spot on my waffle.
Oh, Am I committed to and do I encourage my mate's spiritual, professional, and individual growth and freedom? Oh, I do. Because if Dave loves what he's doing and he's happy and free, everything's good then. And he does that for me. Am I able to share my feelings with my partner? Can I listen to my partner's feelings with an open mind? And today, Dave and I have learned, and this is learned behavior. We have learned to be able to share our feelings and communicate with each other without hurting each other. Because you did this and you made me feel and all of this stuff. I just hung on everything he did and said. And today, sometimes I'll say, when you do that, this makes me feel. And we're able to communicate. Nobody feels defensive today when that word comes out. I feel. And used to, when it was I feel, everybody's defenses went up because we were just about to get criticized for something we did that ended up hurting the other person. So, but today we're kind of, we can kind of do that without having that fear. We've done it enough that we trust that we're going to do the best we can not to harm each other. Am I reluctant to work on my part of the relationship? Dave and I have this saying in our house, if he comes in and he's complaining about something, or I come in and I'm complaining about something, we'll always say, what's your part in it? And, we're going to say, I don't have a part. I don't have a part. But what happens is we're always trying to encourage each other to look at ourselves, because as long as I'm blaming you for what's wrong with me, the only way I'm going to get better is if you change. And sometimes other people don't change. So what I have to do is I have to be willing to know that whatever is wrong with me is my responsibility. Because if whatever's wrong with me is your fault, then the only way I'm going to get better is if you change. Tradition 4.
Where it says each of us should be autonomous except in matters affecting the other, our family, or our society as a whole. I know this will surprise many of you, but we don't do much that affects society as a whole. So that hasn't been a big problem for us. However, in matters affecting the other or our family, this just means that each one of us should be autonomous, okay? Autonomous means self-governing. And there's an area where we have to come together for sure, and that's in the area of family and children. But other than that, what this means to me is that I have to be unselfish and afraid. I have a wish for Polly and for all of you, for that matter, that you just all become the very best person you can be, whatever that means to you. Don't ask me what you should be. You ask God and you ask your heart, and I thoroughly and totally encourage you to be that. This is not a dress rehearsal we're doing here, okay? This is it, okay? And you can't, one of the most horrible things I can think of is to wake up when you're growing near to your last and final breath and have the thought, well, crap, I blew it. No, that is not good. That would just be one of the worst things that I think of that can happen. So, you just decide who and what you want to be. And people that love you will encourage you to do and be that. You can't, nobody is going to live their life to make you happy and comfortable. If you don't claim it, you won't get it. They want you to live your life to make them happy and comfortable. So this tradition gives us the ability to think, well, how does this affect us rather than how does this affect me? If Polly is free, if you are free, you make much better partners, you make much better friends, It freedom just lubricates the intercourse between us. So each partner is free to choose their own way of functioning, yet, still there is the requirement that we preserve the unity of the relationship. Autonomy means self-governing, and in order to be autonomous, we must first realize we're God's kids, okay? Yeah, we're somebody's child or mother or father or brother or sister or wife or husband, but when we individually ask God what we are to do, what he would like for us to do one day at a time, and then go about trying to do his will, we're not going to endanger our relationship. You know, my fondest wish for me is that I be shown how to live my life in such a way that whenever I cross God's mind, he will spontaneously smile. Is that a big wish? Oh, yeah. But that's what I want. That's what I shoot for. You know, that is my version of perfection. If I ever cross God's mind, I hope he spontaneously smiles. And that is so out of character for me. I thought for a long time, I don't ever want to turn my will in my life completely over to the care of God. You know, I'm not going to do that. Somebody taught me along the way that doing that is going to result in a life of just drudgery or boredom or something. That is no way. You're just not going to be able to have fun if you do that. I thought, you know, if I remove all the restrictions completely, the next thing you know, I'm going to be in some damn dugout floating down the Zambezi River taking a bunch of Bibles to some people that live out in the jungle. You know, I have since come to understand, because of Alcoholics Anonymous and what you have taught me, that I have to remove all the restrictions. I mean, you either want God in your life or you don't, Dave. What is your choice to be? You know, and that's exactly what the book says. What is your choice to be? It says that in the chapter of the agnostics. So my choice has become, I want God to be happy with me. After all he's done for me, please. Everything that I know for sure, that I feel in my heart of hearts that God has done for me, has made me enormously happy and peaceful. So that's what I want. I want autonomy. I want to be free to pursue that goal. So we talked a lot about trying to do his will, and if we do that, we're not going to endanger our relationship. We're just not. I mean, that's just not the way it all works. We ask God to treat us as a unit. You know, we talked about unity. Treat us as a unit, as two halves of one whole. Keep us together. Support us. Encourage us. And help us behave like you would like for us to behave. Allowing your mate to be free, to be responsible for themselves, is not going to threaten anything. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. There's a guy named Dr. Paul who wrote one of the stories in the big book, and they changed the page that it appears on, which just royally chapped the hide of many, many people in AA, because they used to like to know. I mean, the page was very well memorized, and now nobody can find it. And Paul Ollier was a very good dear friend of mine, and he told me one time he wished he had never written this. That's all anybody knows him by. He said, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. And if you hang around here long enough, you'll probably come to believe that. If you don't yet, you probably will come to believe that. You know, who cares whether, in the overall scheme of things, the universe doesn't care whether I like it or not. It, you know, it's like I said earlier, nobody's doing anything to me. They're just doing it. You know, this is the way the universe operates. I can fight it all I want to, but why? All I'm going to get is stubbed toes and a bloody nose. You can't fight that. So the need to judge and to criticize is deadly. The third patriarch of Zen says, if you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. There was a very famous German philosopher by the name of Immanuel Kant. And Mr. Kant, Professor Kant, Dr. Kant said, you cannot know everything there is to know about anything. You just can't. So what if you have a very firm opinion based on information you have on something? What if I take that subset of information that is available on whatever the subject matter is and take that away from you and replace it with an equally viable but different subset of information on that same thing? Would you change your mind? Maybe. So you can't know that you're right with metaphysical certitude. You just can't. So, you know, I have lost interest in being right. And it's also true that you're going to find what you look for. I always find what I look for. If I'm looking for thorns, I am not ever going to see a rose. Never. But I'll be drawn to every thorn on the branch. So you're just going to find what you're looking for. So the negative judgment, the negative practice of judgment and criticism means that I believe there's a right and a wrong, and that I can differentiate between them better than you. So it's not only my right, it's my duty to assess you. So, you know, it's my ego that wants to do that, you know. Let me tell you something. Your ego is not your amigo. So, you know, so how can I stop this? Well, gratitude, forgiveness, those are good. A negative attitude doesn't benefit anybody. That's what the Dalai Lama says. So every morning I say the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as you will. That is scary at first, but you get used to it. I have since come around to the position that anywhere, anytime, anything, whatever you want, whenever you want it, wherever you want it, if you need somebody to go get in a canoe and float down the Zambezi River with a couple of cases of Bibles, I'm your guy. You have to buy me a ticket. I don't have any money, but I'm your guy. I'll do it. Because you have finally convinced me that if I am doing God's will, there's an intensity to the happiness that I feel that I cannot describe. So, we talked about all that. So, do I feel like there are only certain ways to do things? And do they happen to be my ways? And do I insist on things being done in those ways? Not anymore. I believe in freedom. You know, we have a sign in some places, and it says if and the world, we share it with the world. We're very generous of spirit. It says, if you love someone very, very much, let them go free. If they return of their own free will, they are yours to love forever. If they don't, hunt them down and kill them. Am I willing to go to any lengths, her lengths, not mine, to protect the integrity of our relationship? Do I carefully avoid injuring Polly emotionally, physically, or spiritually? Do I criticize her in any way? How do I deal with her anger regarding something I've done through my autonomy? Am I defensive? Am I argumentative? Do I try to subdue her with still greater anger? Do I point out previous mistakes she has made? Do I try to punish her in any way? You know, if you want a lose-lose deal, let me give you one of the best ones I know of. Every time you get in an argument with somebody, go back in your history with them and find something that they did that was a screw-up and bring it into today and try to rub their nose in it one more time. You know, all you'll do is just make them angry, and they'll be angry at you. That is not a clever strategy. To what extent do I depend on Polly's looks, our race, our education, our age, our dress, our job, our behavior, or any other attributes she may have for my personal self-esteem? What does Polly have to do to keep my precious ego fluffed up? Might ask yourself that question. Some of these are kind of tough to get through the first time. Okay. You want to do it?
5 minutes.
5 minutes? You can break now.
Okay. Go to five. We'll start with five.